Hi, everybody. This is Janice Gray with DTA Associates. I am so excited to be talking today with Dr. Andrew Lundquist. Hi, Dr. Lundquist. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Janice. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, it's so great to chat. You know, the two of us had a chance to catch up, gosh, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, and we were talking about a lot of things telehealth related, and I ask if you'd be willing to come on here and share a little bit about your experience with us. So thanks so much for being willing to come back and to chat on recording with me.
Oh yeah, of course. Telehealth. Yeah, we've done a little bit of that over the past few months.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year. Well, let me just first back up and introduce you to who we're talking to. I've known Dr. Lundquist now. I checked this morning. We met back in 2013. I double checked. So it's been quite a while now, and really great physician, amazing leader. And I just want to tell you a little bit about his background. Dr. Andrew Lundquist, DPM, FAC, FAS, you're going to have to tell us what those mean, is the chief medical officer at the Mankato Clinic. And he has over 15 years of healthcare leadership experience. And he's really driven by a desire to improve patient outcomes. And that's really where we've connected. Dr. Lundquist received his medical degree from the College of Podiatric Medicine and
Podiatric,
Surgery.
You got it.
Okay, see, I'm going to learn all sorts of good words today. Podiatric right. Medicine and Surgery at Des Moines University. And he also completed his residency at the Detroit Medical Center. He's board certified by the American Board of Foot and Ankle Surgery and Foot Surgery and Reconstructive Rear Foot and Ankle Surgery. Now, I love this part. He said he thinks he's pretty capable of technology, but his kids say that he can barely figure out his phone. And as a fellow parent of teens and tweens, I totally understand that critique. I think we hear that at our house too. Well, welcome, Dr. Lundquist. Thanks so much for coming on and letting me butcher the names of some of your degrees. Can you tell us what does FAC, FAS stand for?
So that's just a fellow of the American College of Foot and Ankle Surgeons. It just means board certified. So you handled those really well. Sometimes I'm called a pediatric specialist. Sometimes pediatric surgery comes in there. But no, you handled it really well. And you know, we met 7 years ago because you were coaching me on how to interact with patients better. And it's been a long time, and you've done a number of coaching sessions for a number of providers in our clinic, and it's been a good relationship to help us understand how we can interact with patients better. And it's kind of funny how it's come in full circle now. It used to be face to face in the same room as a patient, and now we're talking about telehealth, which is a whole different animal. And I put in that comment about my kids because that actually, my son who's 14 told me that before I had to send you my bio. And I was trying to pull up a YouTube clip, and he was looking over my shoulder, and it was like, you know, he's looking over like, just hand me the phone, I'll get to this much more quickly. And he's, you know, pushing things, and I'm stumbling, and I thought I was pretty good at this kind of thing, but apparently not as good as a 14-year-old.
Oh, I love it when they school us. My favorite too is, you know, if you go out to a restaurant right now and you have to like zap the QR code to get your menu, my kids have no patience for me. They automatically just pull it up and do it for me. So
yes, right.
I totally hear you. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when we were chatting, gosh, you're right. We met 7 years ago. We've done a variety of things together. Especially as your roles changed there at Mankato. It was fun to just connect the other week. And honestly, my reason for reaching out was to just say, oh my gosh, how are you doing? And tell me about telehealth there, because I feel like everybody, I just started asking you all these questions that I'm just curious about. And I realized, man, if I'm curious about them, I think a lot of other people are too. So I wonder if you can take us back. Let's go back to like before January of this year. Can you describe what your telehealth strategy or ideas about telehealth, like what did it look like within the organization? How did you speak of telehealth? What was on the plans prior to going into 2020?
It's funny because that seems like so long ago. It really does. And we kind of dabbled in in telehealth. It, mm-hmm. because of a lot of the restrictions that CMS and the payers had, we couldn't do a lot with it. It mm-hmm. it made sense for some specialties in rural areas, but for a lot of patients and providers, it really didn't make much sense because the patient would have to come to an originating site and then connect at that site. So if you think about mm-hmm. it, a patient who lives in a smaller town would have to go to a clinic to set up that visit, which is secured, HIPAA compliant, to connect with a provider at another clinic. So they'd have mm-hmm. to still drive somewhere. And mm-hmm. so in our case, in our clinic site, it was the patient may have to drive 20 minutes to get to a site, check in, set that up, and then connect with a provider, whereas they could just maybe drive 40 minutes and come see us in person. So it didn't make a lot of sense to many of the patients that needed telehealth. So we had an initiative at the beginning of the year to try to put some technology options in place for us to interact with our patients better. And I was thinking about more electronic health, connecting with patients through a portal, doing things like that. So it was kind of on our radar, but you know, we got pushed off a cliff into telehealth when the whole pandemic health when it hit.
Yeah, as did so many people, right? It really, there's been a lot of things forced on us this year, and that was one for sure. You know, I was thinking, I mentioned that you're the chief medical officer of Mankato Clinic, but I didn't really describe Mankato Clinic, and I'm just thinking that folks outside of Minnesota may not actually know much about that. Do you mind just telling us a little bit about Mankato Clinic, just kind of size, locations, and kind of the areas that you serve?
So yes, so we are a multi-specialty group. We have 180 providers, so half of those are physicians and half are advanced practice providers. We have 7 different clinic sites across southern Minnesota, and we have about 800 employees that are part of our clinic. And we are a physician-owned group, and so that means that we have a lot of physicians that are in leadership and working to implement some of the things that we're looking at. So we've been around for over 100 years, and we are kind of a mid-size clinic in Minnesota. If you think of like the whole spectrum of size of groups, we're kind of a mid-size.
Great. Well, and I will say for anyone who hails from the Twin Cities area, to drive down and visit some of your sites, it's absolutely a beautiful drive down 169 and real close to the Twin Cities. So it's a great, great, amazing clinic. And I had no idea that it's been in existence for over 100 years. That's fantastic.
Right. Yeah. It was founded by 5 physicians. I think it was 105 years ago now, and then we've grown from there.
That's so cool. That's great. Well, so I know we want to get to telehealth, but I want to first just take us, as painful as it might be, back through the beginning of the year. So like you said, prior to this, you know, telehealth was sort of kind of out there on the radar, but can you just say for a little bit, just like how did COVID-19, how did that initially impact the clinic? Did you guys close? When did you first kind of see what was happening? Just, can you just take us through a little bit of that from, I'm assuming, what was January, February, early March of your lives there this year?
Yeah, it's going back in time. We were looking at, so I remember a point in time, you know, I kind of looked back in certain memories that were in February and March, and we had a Minnesota Medical Association day at the Capitol. And I remember a lot of us physicians there at the Capitol, and we were meeting with some of our legislators, and we were talking about this COVID thing that was happening. And the questions were, do you think this is real? You know, we're having some meetings at the state level on how we should look at this. And we just told them that we're looking at it too, and we're kind of uncertain on how it's going to affect us. And we were making a few plans. based on some of the things that had happened, you know, like SARS back in the day. But we were pretty quickly pushed right there in mid-March into, you know, shutdown mode and having to really redefine the way that we provided care to our patients and the way that we looked at what was essential, what was non-essential. And it was a very, very, you know, to look back at that time before it hit, it was a very interesting time because there were some people that were really worried about it, thinking that it could hit kind of how it was or how it did. And then there were some who were, you know, not taking it that seriously.
Yeah. No, thanks for, like I said, it's kind of painful sometimes or just weird to go back to that time, but I think it's really easy to forget some of that and it can feel like a lifetime ago. So I know you mentioned that it really caused you to have to redefine how you were going to provide care to patients. So can you talk us through that? Like, what did you end up doing for telehealth during that time and how did you decide you to continue to provide care? What did that look like?
Well, yeah, it was kind of a slow, and when I say slow, it took a week or two for us to kind of say, hey, listen, we see that we have these patients that are at risk, and you know, what does that mean for each patient, and how should we look at who needs to come in, and how should we reach out to our patients, and then things happened pretty quickly over a span of about a week to where CMS relaxed their rules for the originating site. Mm-hmm. You know, they said that they even specifically called out FaceTime as a option for people. They took away that HIPAA compliance problem that was there for everyone. So then we quickly put together our process and our way of reaching out to patients and really tried to operationalize, you know, the patients that could see us in the office and really needed to see us because their conditions were such. And then those patients that needed telehealth, we tried to get them up and running. You know, does this patient have a computer? Do they have an iPhone? Should we just do a telephone call? And so we quickly moved to a platform, and the platform is Bluestream.
Okay.
That was they offered a free service to us that was a telehealth option that we quickly rolled out to our providers. And the story behind that goes is that one of our patient reps found this as an option and sent it to the leadership team. And I walked into the office one day and our CEO, Randy, and our CFO, Steve, had the Bluestream app up on their phones. And one had a iPhone and one had an Android device and they're both working. And so we just said, okay, this is our beta test. Let's roll this out to the rest of the clinic. And we went from there. You know, it's really, we were reacting like everyone else and then improvising and adapting and operationalizing it as we went through that first few weeks.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And look how quick everything had to move. We're not always known for that I say that lovingly in our healthcare community, but that's fantastic. So, you know, was there a period of time that you did more by way of telehealth, you know, in terms of how long you were, you know, more, I won't say exclusively, but predominantly using the Bluestream for your visits?
So we normally see about, you know, we were seeing less than 1% of our visits on telehealth, way less than 1%. And within a week, we were doing 45% of our daily visits via telehealth.
Yeah.
So March 23rd is when we first did our first visit. That first week, we saw about 75% of our visits via telehealth. And then that's was when we were kind of really shut down. And then we started allowing some patients to come back to the clinic based on their problem and their medical history. And then, you know, we kind of averaged about 45% of our daily visits were telehealth during the shutdown time.
Okay. Well, and I when you and I chatted a few weeks ago, I was sharing a semi-horror story from a teammate of mine who had done a telehealth visit with a, this was an urgent care provider, and literally, like, she took a screenshot where you can't really see the doctor's face. His wife walked in and out of the camera a couple times, and you were telling me that I feel like you guys did a really good job of trying to prepare your providers. Can you share a little bit about, like, what kind of rules or standards of professionalism you put in place to try to avoid some of those mishaps that that my teammate experienced?
Yeah, well, thanks for that. I would hope that we put some thought and then put some guardrails around telehealth. And, you know, we all saw those Zoom calls and those video conferencing where there was a slip up. You know, maybe you saw the person's forehead, or, you know, their kids walk in, or their dog runs across and knocks things off. And so I think we tried to understand that telehealth became our, you know, patients coming into our clinic. So we were inviting patients into our office, or sometimes our home when our providers are doing telehealth from home. Mm-hmm. And so we tried to put some, I call them guardrails around what that would look like. We wanted a professional attire. We wanted to have a good background that was professional. We didn't allow that person to be the primary caregiver of children under the age of 12 while they were doing telehealth, understanding that, you know, that's going to be a bit of a problem, but we also don't want to have those interruptions. Mm-hmm. And we wanted that to be really all about the patient and their needs. And we didn't want to have those distractions. So we rolled out telehealth, and then we rolled out the telehealth from home policy, and hopefully that helped to continue our Mankato Clinic brand. It's something that I think, you know, we were trying to make sure that we're getting patients the care that they needed right away. And we knew that we were sacrificing some interaction. You know, if you can't touch a patient, you're going to have, you know, a face-to-face visit. You're going to have the face-to-face interaction. And we wanted that to be as clean as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. And I love the specifics that you shared, because I think those are some of the things that a lot of organizations were either dealing with or struggled with or whatnot. So it's good to hear those. I guess I'm also, of course, always curious from a patient perspective, you know, what did you hear from your patients? I mean, did they like this telehealth piece? Like, what were you hearing kind of during, especially during that time where, like you said, you know, a lot of your patient visits were actually happening through this modality?
Right. You know, we heard mixed messages, of course. Mm-hmm. Most patients liked it. We had some comments, you know, it's easy and it works. They're a good experience. They're convenient as opposed to driving in. We also had those issues that we had to troubleshoot, because whenever you're dealing with technology, there's a, like we talked about with me and my phone and my kids' use of the phone, you know, there's a gap with mm-hmm. our patients and then sometimes with our providers. And so we would hear from some providers that it was hard because calls would drop, or when we sent our link to the patient, it would take a while for them to then click on that link and get hooked up with us. We had a few, you know, fail, and we had to then go to just a telephone call, which is, you know, kind of like plan B for us. Mm-hmm. So it was overall a good thing. I think people understood what we were trying to do, and mm-hmm. And they appreciated that. But we did have some snafus, and I'm sure that probably continues as we all deal with bandwidth issues, and, you know, is this going to work on this computer or that device? So we're trying to. One of the things is we looked at for a long-term telehealth option, and we actually continued to go with Bluestream. This isn't anything to, you know, on them, but they gave us a kind of a bare bones option to start with. And then as we looked at another option with them and other vendors, one of the big things we surveyed our providers, and one of the big things that they wanted is to have that support for our patients and our providers. You know, if something went wrong, we want our patient to have the option to have that help as along with our providers. So we ended up going with a Bluestream option to continue on with our relationship with them because we were appreciative of what they did for us right at the beginning.
Sure. Well, and I'm curious, you know, here you and I are talking towards the end of summer 2020. It feels like we've found a bit of a new normal, which I have no doubt is going to change a little bit more as we go into fall. But I'm just curious, you know, what percentage of telehealth versus in-person, what does that ratio look like now, kind of at this point in 2020?
Yeah, right now it looks like 15%, about 10 to 15% of our daily volume is on telehealth. And that's been very steady, you know, since we reopened our elective surgical procedures and our elective clinic visits. So that's been really steady, and we've seen a number of our sites really embrace that and adapt telehealth. Psychology and psychiatry really didn't lose a step because they went on and converted all of their patients almost to telehealth, and they've continued that because it works really well for that patient group. And then we've seen some others that were doing a lot of telehealth visits, but then, you know, stepped away from that because they need to provide care and have the patient in their office. But yeah, the 10 to 15% is what we're seeing. And that's really hasn't budged much over the past 2 months.
Okay, cool.
We'd like to try to increase that. You know, maybe there are those things that we're seeing in the office that could be initially evaluated via telehealth and then go from there. But that's one of those things that we're trying to operationalize telehealth. You know, some of our providers are doing it from home for a day. So that's, that's kind of easier. Some are having telehealth visits pop up in their schedule. So they'll go see a patient and then have a telehealth visit in their office and then go to see a patient in the office. So we're trying to make it work and find those spots to where it can continue to work long term.
Yeah, no, and that's interesting to hear about the different schedules too. I was wondering what that looks like. You know, is it, like you said, it might be, I walk down to the exam room and I see one patient there, I come back and, you know, I'm logging in to do a virtual visit. So lots of options and some flexibility there too. So I guess I'm curious too, I'd like to think we're kind of through this, but I know we're not. So I guess I would just ask, you know, what do you feel like you've learned thus far through this experience of 2020 and kind of everything that you've been navigating as a leader and as a physician during this pandemic?
Well, we've learned a ton, and I think we've learned that we're able to pivot and make changes more quickly than we used to, and I've been hearing that across other clinicians that have similar roles to me. You know, we used to have, you know, maybe monthly cycles of meetings, and every move would be a month time frame between them. Now we're having to where that's a couple days or a week or two. We're able to make changes more quickly and adapt more quickly than we thought we could. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good thing. It's taught us that we can be a little more nimble than we thought we could. So I hope that continues.
Yeah.
I think there are some, you know, we all know that the costs of medical care are really high, and there's some inefficiencies. It's been well documented that, you know, a fair amount of care that's provided is either redundant or somewhat of a waste. And we're able to maybe look at those things and see that we can make things better for the patient and really move our provider time into activities that'll really provide better care for our patients. You know, we have electronic medical records that are sometimes clunky, and we spend more time trying to look at the medical record than we do looking at the patient. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to look at things and change them. And I think the whole acute pandemic shutdown, I think that kind of got us into that cadence, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think those are some great learnings. And any other like big takeaways or things you're still hoping to lean into as we move forward? And I think about things in pretty short bursts of time right now. So it feels like more like the fall is before all of us be at school, et cetera. But, you know, as you transition seasonality here within the clinic and head into flu season, all that good stuff, any other takeaways or things you're really looking to lean into on the horizon?
Yes, there's a couple. I think we've talked about kids going back to school, and in Minnesota right now, we're staring that down, and it's a big unknown as far as how that's going to look for kids. I think we're looking at it as a workforce issue, because if kids have to be hybrid, a learning environment where they're at school for a couple of days and then home for a couple of days, that's going to affect our workforce. Mm-hmm. And that's going to affect our patients. And so we need to be thinking differently than we used to on how we do that, whether it's allowing some of our staff to take that time away and then come back. I know some other groups are adding in Saturday hours so that patients who are going to have to be either at work or with their kids during the week are able to be seen during those. You know, do we offer telehealth visits outside of normal hours? I think telehealth could be one of those options to where our patients, you know, they're at home with kids, they're trying to do work. There's mm-hmm. something that comes up. Instead of taking everyone out and going out, you know, maybe we can do a telehealth visit there. So there's a lot of things that are coming up. You know, we're looking at our risk scoring, our HCC codes. I know our payers are very invested in closing those care gaps and those assessments and things that we need to do for those patients that have chronic medical conditions. So we're looking at trying to catch up on some of those episodes of care that were missed during the pandemic. Mm. So we're trying to play a little catch up on that. And, you know, those are a few of them, but there's certainly a number as we look at the new normal.
Yes, for sure. And I think I love how you framed each of those up. And I also hear, as we're talking today, I just hear, and I appreciate your authenticity about kind of how difficult things have been at times. And yet I hear a lot of hope and a lot of progress, and love to hear the ways that you all have experienced innovation and driven that forward. And at the same way, some of the things that you're pushing towards with that as we move into this next phase. So I so appreciate you coming on. Thanks again, Dr. Lundquist, for being on here. Thanks for all you've done and for your leadership during this time, and for all there is yet to do as we move into fall. I really appreciate you talking with me today.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Janice. Thanks for reaching out and letting me tell a bit of the story, and for also supporting us as we went through this. It's really good to see the whole medical community kind of come together, and some of those barriers that were up, or, you know, those communication lines that were kind of down, really people stepped up and reached out and helped us. And so you were one of those. So thanks for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, I've been talking today with Dr. Andrew Lundquist, the Chief Medical Officer at Mankato Clinic. It's been a pleasure to chat about all things telehealth related. It's an area that we've been really passionate about, and I personally have within DTA doing a lot with the art of the e-visit and how to take the communications coaching that we do and apply it to different new care environments that we're all living into a little bit more. So thanks again, and we'll hope to talk to you all again soon.
Thanks a lot, Janice.
Thanks.